Welcome to Yoga Life Lessons.
With myself, Debbie.
Me, Chris.
And also sometimes me, Lowell.
In this episode, we go back to where it all began.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. How are you today, Debbie?
I'm okay. I'm in lots of different minds today because I'm in retreat planning mode, so...
Retreat planning mode or retreat deadline, get everything packed mode?
That, yes. Yeah. But I'm doing very well, actually. I feel like I'm getting there, so... And how are you today?
I'm in admin deadline before we go away for a week and Wi-Fi might not be so reliable mode.
I mean, it's Portugal. We're not going to the Outer Hebrides, so we'll probably be okay.
Well, this is true, but you say that, but in Ibiza, there was no Wi-Fi.
Right. Okay, so Ibiza is a different story altogether, because Ibiza is a wily
wily Wi-Fi provider.
the White Isle doesn't necessarily give what we want, no. But gives what we need.
Gives us what we need.
Again, there's a song in there somewhere. So I think today we're going to chat about where this all began.
We were indeed.
Yeah, yeah. 2013 was our conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, 2013 was when we moved from being a collection of sole traders under various guises and names to the singular thing that has grown to become everything that, well, yoga therapies and now the different yoga life offerings is.
Mm, yeah, because we came from just quite a cool little tribe, didn't we? Mm-hmm. And that was quite adventurous and I want to say comforting time for lots of people, because I think we all came together when we were meant to come together, and it's funny how the things tip in order to bring you all together at the same time, and yeah, it was something that was quite good, but then everyone started to move off in their own paths, but I remember talking sat on the sofa with just this really big... For anyone who does not know this already, Chris loves a writing pad.
I do.
Specifically Moleskine, but they're a bit expensive. So we try TK Maxx together.
TK Maxx.
But if you have an A4 or an A3 size pad, then the world is your oyster.
Sketch pad, didn't we?
Yeah.
We had multicolored pens.
And then that's where it began.
Mm-hmm.
Why did we do it? Why did we do it?
Why did we do it all? I think that the main drive behind forming the setup the way we did was, well, for me at least, it was twofold primarily. The first was I was beyond sick of carrying mats on the metro. but more than that, everything felt a bit nomadic. It was a bit transient. There were... many things, like, I don't know, you'd turn up to the hall and brownies would still be going and you'd finally chase all these sad-looking seven-year-olds out so that you could start your class on time, only to find that there was like a glitter bomb in the room and cleaning glitter off mats and everything that went with it. But well, it just meant that the experience was never that moment of... which is hopefully one thing that we've created in the studio, is that the second you walk through the door, your breath can change, your posture can change. And there's something that's a really, really powerful signal about that literal gateway into the practice. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to remove as many of those obstacles as possible, which was things like equipment provision, reliable location,
heating
yeah, reliable heating, and ultimately then the capacity to have a receptionist, for there to be space before and space afterwards that wasn't a church car park hallway that, you know, you couldn't guarantee would be open or not, that you could arrive 20 minutes early because the traffic was better and sit down and relax. Or you could chat to your friends for 2 hours afterwards and it not be like the teacher's waiting, someone needs to lock the door, like all of that space was held. And so what you get is a space that supports the practice by removing so many of those kind of mundane daily obstacles, whilst also not negating them entirely. So we didn't want to be out of the city centre. We didn't want there to be no noises. We didn't want there to be no disturbances. We still wanted it to be
life
in the middle of where you are.
Cue a car garage in the middle of Heaton.
Cue a car garage. That sort of balance of, well, it's still in the midst of everything, but it's a big enough container that it allows you to step out. So that was one aspect. And then the second aspect was, prior to operating as a company structure, basically, we ran all sorts of bits and bobs as sole traders, as kicks, and as sort of charitable bodies. And we ran loads of really, really wonderful projects. But the projects lived or died on funding bids. And the funding bids were... One, they weren't my forte, and thankfully it wasn't my job a lot of the time, but there was nothing more frustrating than something that deserved to run, not being able to run because the funding didn't occur, or at least, and then also there was always that caveat where I was like, oh, well, the funding came with conditions that sometimes were exactly what was right for the project. Sometimes they really limited the project. It meant that the sort of malleability of the scope of it was complicated. And so we wanted the reliability of the location. We wanted the reliability of the service provision. And then the sort of the final point to that then was, we wanted to be able to employ the staff, because we wanted them to know that from the first of the month until the end of the month, their salary was, what was expected was, and all of that higgledy-piggledy running in between, different lease terms on different venues, and all that calculating, because there are so many sessions that, I mean, on paper, individually ran at a financial loss for years before they caught up with, you know, the big hitters, the after work slots, the Saturday morning slots, which we could fill 10 times over. And so we wanted that balance of availability for students, but then a social spread of hours for the teachers as well. So we kind of capped how many total classes they could do, how many evening classes was expected, how much weekend work was expected, so that they were able to balance their energy. You know, they weren't back and forth. They weren't running around. They weren't constantly thinking, oh, God, I love my Thursday church. But, you know, so, I've lost, so
I have to, reliability, confess,
reliability.
None of that at all was in my mind. I do not have that much of a calculating mindset. I was just like, I want a really lush place with really nice smells, beautiful colours, it's really warm that I could just lay down and practice yoga, a dedicated space. That was my caveat. I did not even think about any of that. So just, you know, full disclosure,
dedicated
he deals
space.
With that. I deal with the ambiance and the
over-detailing.
Because for me, in all honesty, whenever I've been anywhere or done anything, and even if I practice at home, I can't roll out of bed and unroll my mat if there are, you know, yesterday's shoes on the floor, or I have some stuff that I need to do, or there's like something that I can spot. I need almost that real neutral space. So for me, it needed to be something that was almost hugging me. Energetically. So for me, I mean, obviously when we walked into this car garage, we just seen the space and we thought, what can we do with this? It's within our monthly budget and we can probably do something with this space. And the guy was just, he was just a canny old gadgy, wasn't he? I mean, he was a bit like Del Boy.
He was a full pelt Del Boy. I don't know if he did, but I remember him with a fur-lined leather jacket.
Yeah, absolutely.
When he walked around, I'm pretty sure he did.
He was a salesman.
He was a salesman. He was an old school car salesman.
Yeah, and loved a good shortcut.
He loved a good
shortcut. He did. And the amount of times I asked him for a new roof.
Yeah, we didn't get a roof.
No, you're not having that. But anyway, but then came the design, which we went back to that A3 pad, mm-hmm. and then put the pencil to the paper and drew out how we wanted this, which door we were going to use. Because at first we had the front doors, the entrance, but then we had the side doors, the entrance, because it was just a quieter space. But it was...
Because as soon as you open that front door, all the heat from the building left in 5 seconds flat.
Yeah.
And because the whole thing just whistled.
Yeah.
Keeping heat in that building was not an easy...
But then painting and then building everything from pallets, wood pallets. It was just such a cool thing. I felt like it was a real... And I'm just going to put this out, and people can judge me for it if they want, but we were really innovative and ahead of our times. You know, that whole reusing of things wasn't necessarily the thing then. Now it's kind of, what can we repurpose this for?
Yeah,
but back then, it wasn't so much of a thing. And even the panelling on the walls that you did with one of the yoga teachers. Things to keep the heat in.
Desperate to use the flamethrower. He was like, let's burn them. I was like, we can just sand them. He was like, no, we'll get the torch. We'll get the blowtorch.
Yeah, so I think for us, we just wanted this really beautiful space that we could just arrive to, that was really snuggly, that smelt really good, that had some really beautiful things in. Mm-hmm. And from then... We just ran with it, didn't we? We had some absolutely amazing things on the schedule. We were approached by some very interesting yoga teachers to teach. Mm-hmm. I think that's the one thing that is my most interesting aspect of being a yoga studio owner is speaking to potential yoga teachers. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really interesting thing, and how people advertise themselves as a yoga teacher, but then what their requirements are. You know, I'm a yoga teacher. I love your space. I'd love to come work there, but these are my requirements. I'm just like, okay, am I giving you the job, or are you giving me the job? Like, what's happening here?
Well, I think the hardest thing to navigate there is the umbrage that's taken when people get in touch asking for a job, even though we're not advertising any vacancies. And then it's received as a personal insult that we haven't offered them the role.
I think that's a whole other different podcast, yoga teachers. I think it's an interesting one, because if you went for any other job, you would definitely not go in with the mindset that you do when you come in to teach yoga. It's almost like they come in to teach yoga, but we have to remember, people come into yoga for their headspace, for introspection, to help them with their mental health. And then teaching yoga is not like, it's a different thing. It's a different thing entirely. It's a path that you take in order to assist people. So you are almost the portal for that. You're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for others. And with that takes dedication and also a little bit of sacrifice as well. I mean, the things that we have sacrificed in our lives and still continue to do so is unseen, because we just do it. You know, there's never the complaint, there's never the issue, there's never anything like that. Mm-hmm. But also, it's just because it's what we do, you know, it's just what we do.
Yeah. Well, I think we've said lots of times, haven't we, that that teaching mat is a service space. It's not a stage.
Mm-hmm.
And many people are proud of what they've achieved.
Of course.
I mean, certainly I think social media confuses this, because there's this notion that somehow by demonstrating what you've overcome, that inspirational step is all that's necessary for other people to overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are probably some points where that challenge is genuinely like, you know what, I've seen this person doing it and I believe I can. But those are rare moments, and whilst they're significant moments, they're not the they're not the lasting skill set. You know?
It's worth saying, if you, it's not about overcoming something. It's about it's about managing it. So it's not necessarily that if people come in with a mental health problem or, you know, let's say an eating disorder that's very big at the moment, people are being incredibly triggered by lots of things on the internet at the moment. But it's not that you just become completely resolved of it. It's that you manage it. It's something that becomes a management on a daily basis, because there's always that trigger. What you don't want to do is recycle old behaviors. So what you do is you manage it, and you manage that with elegance on the yoga mat, because you're able to move through and know that you can take your own practice and manage it. But then when you're on the yoga mat, you're actually providing a service. That's two different things.
And we certainly in the teacher training spent a lot of time drumming in the difference between teaching and your personal practice, and how your personal practice will be the thing that underpins and informs and inspires your teaching practice, but how fundamentally the aims of those two things need to be separated.
But if you've done your yoga practice and it's not on Instagram, have you even practiced?
Yeah, I know. Does a bear what?
But anyway, so going back to the start, I'd love to say this, because the building of the walls, I have to say, it began very complicated, because it was a student who started building it. But bearing in mind, at the time, we used to do lots of yoga classes with the addiction groups and things like that. So we had lots of people who were helping, and it was great. But I have to put a shout out for my dad, your granddad.
Who was in a wheelchair.
Yes.
Who stepped in to sort out the... Yes, because we agreed a price and a time frame for the job that got translated into a daily rate and was not progressing. And it just got to the point that we had to say, like, we need to step in. And and I mean, to their credit, they had some significant life changes that meant that it was impossible for them to keep up with what they'd originally said. But you know, we didn't have the capacity to just say, oh, well, you know, that's okay.
But for me, how the family situation occurred, where, you know, my dad, your dad, your grandfather, just came in and did it and brought that absolute, but mainly how you climbed the walls like Spider-Man. If Lowell could see what you were doing, it was just absolutely crazy. But the walls were built. They were painted, they were done, dusted, and it was just absolutely, the day that we opened, which was it the, it was the 28th of February, was it not? Yeah, because we started the work on the 24th of January, and then it was
pretty
the 28th
of
it. Yeah, and we had like a soft opening then, and I just remember...
Whilst the plaster was still too wet to actually paint.
But I remember being super, super proud and just thinking, oh my gosh, look, it's a pure yoga studio, the only pure yoga studio that was in Newcastle, and we had done it.
Yes.
We'd just done it. Yeah, and at that point, I kind of was just like, oh no, now we have to actually run it.
Now the fun begins.
Yes, now the fun begins. So so that was it. But it was something that I remember planning, and it just being the most exciting time. And here we are,
over 10 years later.
New studio, but you know, we did it.
Not that new now.
We did it.
This is nearly five years old now.
Yeah, this is true.
So, funny. And obviously, we had a five-year plan, which was to get us to what would be our forever
studio.
And then we had a 10-year plan, which will be, let's get to it lasting. And then obviously that second five-year segment got absolutely blown out
high
of the
COVID.
Water.
Yeah. But you know, and everybody who's got through COVID and survived the COVID.
The COVID.
Well done for just pushing and fighting through, because it was tough for yoga studios, because we got nada.
We fell through the cracks massively.
So But that's how it all began.